walk alone. Step by step,
step by step,
day by day, I'm on the road to recovery, trusting God along the way, trusting God along the way, trusting God all the way.
Welcome. Welcome, everyone, to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday night Alcoholics and God Speakership Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Jessica. And thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise or might distract others. Please keep your feet off the kneelers in front of you. The church does not like us to do that. Take this time to get connected to God and let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused and on the step study tonight. So is everybody ready? Okay. Awesome. Okay, we're going to leave with the fog light prayer. If anyone doesn't know it, there's these little yellow cards in the pews in front of you. God, like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. There's a solution from the big book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we've discovered a common solution. We have a way out in which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Nick to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one. So it's kind of important to know what one is.
Hi, guys. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Nicholas.
Hi, Nicholas.
The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book. which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it is not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, the friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline, which few exceptions our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of a spiritual experience. Our most religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or religional denial. We find that no one need difficulty with spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is great, which is a bar against all information, which is proof that all arguments and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt of prior to investigation. Page 567.
Thank you. All right, folks, so please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so please set your phones to airplane meeting mode or just turn them off. And tonight, I'm really happy to introduce Marion back from the islands. I hope you had a good time, and I'm really excited that you're here. We had a great meeting last week with Isabel, but you're definitely missed, so come on up.
I'm Marion. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And, it's good to be back here. Alcoholics and God. This great group that's brought life to so many people. I am so honored to stand here and be a part of this. I have goosebumps. It's not cold in here. Besides, I'm sweating and goosebumps at the same time, and I'm past menopause. So, oh God, did I say that? And it's on tape. Oh Lord, help me. Actually, yeah. So I have a sobriety date. It's November 11th, 1989, and I have a really cool sponsor who listens to my stuff and. I sponsor a lot of women, and I love this fellowship with my whole heart. And it's great to see Nicoletta and her husband back. And it's just sentimental to see you tonight here, because when I first came down to Florida, you were two people that welcomed me with open arms and made me feel welcome. And we connected, you know, spirit to spirit. And so it's wonderful to see you again, and wonderful to be back. We had an awesome trip, suffering with the work people in St. Thomas, Virgin Islands. How does that happen for a girl like me is beyond my wildest dreams. And our big book talks about that. The great event shall come to pass for you and countless others. And there's the big things, but there's the little things. It's the things that God's done in my heart and in through this fellowship, through... through walking shoulder to shoulder with a lot of you in this room. And I'm undone by my gratitude. I don't know what it is about. There's just that moment to come up here, and when I get here, I can't believe it's my life once again. And I want to stay like that. I pray I stay like that, you know, and just be emptied of me when I get here. Just be emptied of me. Except for a little coffee and a little water I'm drinking, I'll probably be a little bit empty. And you know what I do want to say? What's really, really cool is I'm seeing a lot of women here. And that's really beautiful. Guys, you're great. Love you lots. You're my bros, my little kids. And I love all that. But it's so wonderful to see a lot of women here. And so that's my disclaimer. We had a great trip. A mountainous, beautiful place. And everything went wrong when we got to the airport on the way back. It was crazy. We had a lost airport. We got someone searched. What was the other thing that went wrong? Bleeding finger. John had a bleeding finger. We had a passport missing, a woman getting searched, and we had to go through customs, which didn't make any sense because we were in the United States, but we must have looked a little shady. Which doesn't make sense, but whatever. God got us back. And so anyways, great that Isabel came in and had her little 16th birthday party, I heard. And so God bless her. Happy anniversary to her. And I'm coming up on my anniversary next week in 27 years in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I know, surprise, surprise, it might be a little emotional tonight, and there'll be stories and reflections of how I came to, this is step two tonight, how I came to believe in this power greater than myself. And I had some time to reflect. I reflect and I pray when I'm swimming. That's my new thing. And try to, like, actually do it all day long throughout my day. And one of the things I was thinking of is, you know, the most unnatural thing for us to be doing tonight as alcoholics is to be sitting in this room in a church on a Thursday night at 8:15. You know, I was listening to someone the other day talk about, you know, I'm right where I'm supposed to be. It's like, no, this is not normal for us. And I know Michael suffered a loss this week of somebody real close to him, and you know that's what our disease does. It's cunning, baffling, and powerful. And what it also does is it likes jails, institutions, and death. And somehow we get to sit here together, and I've done this with people I work with and people I surround myself with. If you don't think there's a God working in this room right now, there's nobody chained to these chairs. There's nobody that's got to be in this meeting. This is Fort Lauderdale, and it's freaking November, and it's a nice summer night out there. I know where I'd be if I was in my disease. Something's got us here tonight, guys. And it isn't just because I'm speaking, that's for sure. You know? And, I mean, really, to think of and to ponder that there's probably 200 people in this room. There's a God working here, guys. There's a God working. And, you know, I believe for me, you know, I'm going to go into some big book stuff about this, but the old timers told me back in the day, you know, and I don't even know if they say this anymore, but they said, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I came to, and then I came to believe. And how, you know, I told you during my first step how I'd found God in my life and how I received the Lord Jesus in my life. That was for me, and yet I still struggled with this disease, and God set up this divine time and this divine moment when two alcoholics came into the room and sat at the end of the bed, and I'll remember that as one of the most glorious days of my life. you know, the presence of Alcoholics Anonymous and the presence of this loving God on my behalf. On my behalf. And things started happening and building from there. Like I told you, you know, I ended up working the first three steps in the treatment center forms. You know, I don't even know what it looked like back then. They wanted me to give it a grand total of how much money I spent on alcohol and other forms of alcohol. You know, count the money. It's like, I don't know how much money. You know, whatever. But it was something that got me working and got me moving. You know, because it's a program of action. And it wasn't like God just, you know, waved a wand over my head and said, Marion, you're sober now. It didn't happen that way. But what did happen was things that they used to, like, I'm going to give you old-timer quotes, guys, because I believe in that stuff. I believe in those people that I rub shoulders with and how the things that they taught me, you know. But they would tell me stuff like, you know, that there's no such thing as coincidence. That's God working in your life. And things started happening to me that I couldn't explain. I told you about the first woman that I knew that was an alcoholic. And she ended up coming to the treatment center. And she was picking me up to take me to my first meeting. And the only woman I knew on the planet that was sober. And they made her my temporary sponsor. You know, that was one of the things that helped me start believing. And I told you about going to dry dock to that meeting that I didn't want to be at. And this woman opening her mouth and telling her story and how I related to that. She was a woman who was just like me. And I needed to hear that. A woman who was just like me. But here's the key. She was just like me, but she wasn't like me anymore. And that gave me hope. And I was hopeless and I was dead and I hated who I was. And this C.B. McLaren with the flat top and the warty alcoholic nose, you know, looked at me and he said, Marion, we'll love you till you can love yourself. They would tell me things like that, you know. And in the treatment center, I got to tell the story. It's so cool, but I loved it. But I felt like God was just, like, he opened me up to see the world for the first time. And it felt like it was through different eyes, you know. I'm from the Pacific Northwest, and it was November, and the leaves were changing, and they were falling, and they were bright reds, and they were bright oranges, and they were just... And I was walking with the other clients down to the park, and we'd go down, and we would swing like little kids, you know. And I'm 30 years old, and I'm swinging, you know. And I remember I felt like I was smelling that air for the first time. I felt like I was seeing those colors for the first time, and I felt like I was alive. And like Peter tells a story about driving down the road and being with these guys, and he hears Guns N' Roses, Sweet Child of Mine, and the sun was setting. And I love that story like that. This was me on that swing, swinging as high as I could in the fall with my new found friends that were going to be friends forever, just kind of like meeting at camp, you know. And we're swinging on these swings, and I'm just like, I'm going to make it. I'm going to make it. I was getting hope. And it was all in stages, and it all just, you know, it was like looking through the eyes with a new pair of glasses, like Chuck Chamberlain talks about. You know, I could see things through different eyes. I could see colors, and you know, and those are the ways I built my faith. You know, those are the ways I knew God. Peter talks about, you know, knowing that I'm known by my Creator. He started doing these things, putting people, you know, I'd go into a meeting with contempt prior to investigation. I'd be so full in my head of just the screaming voices that our alcoholic heads have, you know. And somebody would say the right thing at the right moment, and I'd be okay, you know. And I'd be just like, wow, God, you just did that for me. And my first sponsor, I got to talk about her a little bit, you know. I was really excited and got into AA, and, you know, I'm doing a million things, and I don't have my first sponsor was the temporary one that I told you about. And then I ended up with this lady because I needed to know more about God. And And we, you know, I told you guys about how I made it into the rooms because, well, not because I bottomed out and because of good, of the gift of desperation, but I also came in behind the death of my son and the death of my mother. And this woman, she came up to me on a Friday and she said, "Marian, what are you doing this weekend?" And I gave her this huge long list rundown. I'm going to do this. I'm taking the kids to the park. I'm going to do this. 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 And she stopped me in my tracks and she goes, "Maybe one of these days you'll slow down enough to let God be in charge." And it was, it stopped me in my tracks. It was in that moment where I just was like, "I need your help." And how this relates to the grief I had in my life was Kathy was, she was an old timer, her and her husband, you know, they had the AA picnics, they, you know, people were coming over to their house, their phones were, you know, ringing off the hook, you know, that's the kind of people they were. And Kathy had three little kids, and she was diagnosed with brain cancer. And, oh, man, it was so hard. But, you know, I'd be like, she has me in the process, and she's got me doing the steps, and I'm not calling her because she's losing her hair, and, you know, she's got scarves around her head, and she's got all this going on, and I'm not calling her, and she's calling me to share with her about my life. And she taught me one of the greatest gifts of Alcoholics Anonymous. She had a servant's heart. And what she told me was, "Don't you deny me my sobriety by not calling me." And I'd go to her house, and it was the fall, and there was the leaves, and we'd walk around, and she had the old-fashioned thing. They don't do it anymore either. I love it. But they we pressed them. She had wax paper and leaves, and we made these books with the wax paper and the leaves. It was so cool. And I got to walk her through that. I got to sit by her side, and I got to walk her through that. And I got to walk through loss in sobriety. She handed me off to her best friend named Suze, who actually reminded me of Suze from Floho. Just a big biker broad, you know. So that was my next sponsor after that. But anyway, you know, she walked me through that stuff. And guys, I just want to say, you know, if you're new, you're new to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you just stay open to those experiences. You know, I believe in the gift of desperation. That process started in my bright pink bathroom when I looked in the mirror. That process started then, and probably hundreds of times after that in my own life. You know, and it's like there's so many ways that even in my life today, you know, when I can apply, came to believe in a power greater than myself in my life today, of areas of my life, when I get caught up in the bedevilments, when I'm having problems in emotional relationships, when I'm full of pride, when I'm full of ego, when I'm full, I mean, you don't even know, I was full of some of that stuff this weekend. I hope I hit it well, but Peter got a lot of it. You know, thank God for God to restore me to a place of wholeness. And that's what it is. You know, guys, it came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity must mean there must have been some insanity along the way. Okay? So I'm going to read a little big book here. A little big book. A big, big book. And I was really moved to talk a little bit about, actually, in the doctor's opinion, on page XXVII. Moral psychology was of urgent importance to alcoholics, but its application presented difficulties beyond our conception. What with our ultra-modern standards, our scientific approaches to everything, we're perhaps not well equipped to apply the powers of God, or good, but God, that lie outside our synthetic knowledge. Then at the bottom of the page, it talks about us. Of course, the unselfishness of these men as we have come to know them, the entire absence of profit, motive, and Their community spirit is indeed inspiring to one who has labored long and wearily in this alcoholic field. They believe in themselves and still more in the power which pulls chronic alcoholics back from the gates of death. And I love that, you know. I went to doctors and I got medications and I went to psychologists, like I told you before, like I'm crazy. You know, and I got some help around those areas. And the book talks about we'll be quick to see where they are right, the religious people are right, you know, and to seek that outside help if we need that outside help. But in this altruistic movement that we call Alcoholics Anonymous, that's where I found my solution through these 12 steps. The chapter to the agnostic. Agnostics, page 45, lack of power, that was our dilemma. I heard a woman talking about this last weekend, and it was something that hit my heart. She was talking about her children, and she was saying how that she would die for her children, but she couldn't get sober for them. And that was me with my kids. That was me. You know, if I would literally throw myself in front of a train for my children, but I can't get sober for them. See, I can do that. I can die for my children on my power. I can throw myself in front of something for them. But I don't have power when it comes against this disease, guys. That's a really, really, really strong statement. That's a very strong statement to me, to be able to put it into perspective of how much power we have against this disease, guys. Lack of power is our dilemma. With power, no dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously, but where and how are we to find this power? If you're wondering what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is about, there's an answer right here. Besides it growing dust and having coffee cups on it sometimes and picking it up for a good read. Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. That means we've written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And that's, you know, spiritual as well as moral. How many of us come in here so wrecked? I was just like, you know, morally, come on. What is wrong with him? His wife is leaving him. You know, the kids aren't taken care of. You know, he's in jail again. You know, all these things that happen in our life. This is not a moral issue, guys. It's not. And it means, of course, that we're going to talk about God. Here, difficulty arises with agnostics. Many times we talk to a new man and watch his hope rise as we discuss his alcohol problems and explain our fellowship. But his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God. For we've reopened a subject which our man thought he had neatly evaded or entirely ignored. We know how he feels. We've shared his honest doubt and prejudice. The doubt and prejudice for me in my life was always about when I was in my disease, as I was this little girl who didn't have any dolls and I had a dirty house and my mom and dad were poor and they were alcoholics. And then I knew these girls that had God and they had bows in their hair and beautiful little ruffly dresses and a beautiful home. So I believed, and I separated myself from God then at that time, was like, God is there for them, but not for me. I don't deserve God. Some of us have been violently anti-religious. I'm sorry, but they used to talk about in the old day, which they don't say a lot anymore, which I'm really glad. There would be people that were like recovering Catholics or recovering Protestants or whatever, things like that, and just would come messed up from religion, which was the same way I was. I didn't think I was good enough. I didn't think I was good enough for God. To others, the word God brought up a particular idea of him which someone had tried to impress them during their childhood. Perhaps we rejected this particular conception because it seemed inadequate. With that rejection, we imagined we had abandoned the God idea entirely. But as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend the power of God. Oh, my nose, I'm sorry. I told you that I did those first three steps in treatment, but they were what they were. But there was a come to believe moment I had in my life. And another moment, of course, lots of moments. But I was over a year sober, and I was sitting on a fourth step, and I've came to believe that it was a came to believe moment, actually. And I was at a wedding. I hadn't been to a lot of meetings. I hadn't been talking to my sponsor. And I ended up having what our big book talks about, that strange mental blank spot. And I was sitting at a table with a glass of champagne in my hand. Literally in my hand, as far away as this. And I can tell you that I don't know how it got there, that I literally do not remember that moment. And what happened for me was that just in this, where the fear that just gripped me in that moment to be able to set that drink down and run out the door and be with my people down at that dry dock that I criticized, that dry dock that I wasn't a part of, but that fellowship got around me that day. You guys, if you come face to face with a drink in your hand and you don't know how it got there and you are able to set it down, it will make you believe that there's a God, that there's a God on behalf of you. And that was, it was fearful and it was scary. And I can tell you that the fellowship wrapped around me that evening, and they gathered around me, and we were in the book, and we were in that meeting, and I moved forward on those steps. But that was a came to believe moment for me. You know, the gift of desperation I was given in that bathroom that morning, you know, that I knew that, like our book talks about, that I was at the jumping off place. I couldn't see my life with a drink, and I couldn't see it without a drink. And what was I to do? And I think what happened too, you know, even just by calling my sister to come pick me up and take me to that treatment center, for the first time I was reaching outside of myself. For the very first time I was reaching outside of myself for an answer. And I wasn't trying to find it within, oh, I'm going to do this. Oh, I can do this. Oh, I can take care of this. I'm swearing off with or without a solemn oath one more time again. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I willing to believe, that there's a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he's on his way. It's been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderful, effective spiritual structure can be built. I think that for us as alcoholics, there was old timers that used to say this to us. It's like God likes to watch drunks because we're entertaining. We're fun to watch. And I don't know about you, but I had countless times out there where I'd end up in scary places and somehow got a ride home, or I'd come to when I was at home. Or I love to say that he loves to watch drunks, because I bet there's many, many, many cases. See, what doesn't make sense is we come to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and we're not sure whether or not to believe in this God. And we have trouble to believe in this God. But at the same time, how many of us have been in countless, countless situations out there in our life that we can't explain how we made it again? How we made it back again? And that's just the way it is, that he's here. I wanted to read, in this big book, my third edition I can't get rid of. No way. This thing is falling apart. The end of page 4, the bottom of page 49. We've traveled this dubious path. Beg you to lay aside prejudice, even against organized religion. We have learned that whatever the human frailties of various faiths may be, those faiths have given purpose and direction to millions. People of faith have a logical idea of what life is about. Actually, we used to have no reasonable conception whatever. We used to amuse ourselves by cynically dissecting spiritual beliefs and practices when we might have observed that many spiritual-minded people of all races, colors, and creeds were demonstrating a degree of stability. What? You guys relate to that, right? A degree of stability, a degree of happiness and youthfulness. Hey, maybe we ought to give it a shot. Wish we should have sought ourselves. Instead, we looked at the human defects of these people. What were their defects? I'm comparing my insides to their outsides. Guys, I was so busy comparing my broken spirit inside of me to somebody else's outside. And if that has not been a killer my whole entire life, is never being enough and always comparing myself to somebody else instead of showing up, Marion. You know, broken, flawed, this that I am, you know? And that's all God's calling any and all of us to do. That's all God's ever saying for any of us to do. There's a person I'm going to be able to talk to that none of you guys are going to be able to talk to. And there's someone Dane's going to be able to talk to that I won't have a clue how to talk to. And this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is a passion in my life. But I believe God, you know, when I was in treatment, there was this man who was he was the guy at the end of the bed. His name was Steve Nobles, and he was a counselor, and he was like 6'6", like you. And, you know, he told me his wife and him were active members in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he told me, Marion, God just put me here to love people. He just put me here to just love people. You know, you come to our house, me and my wife, him and his wife, they didn't have a television. They didn't read the newspaper. She was a therapist, and she was a child psychologist, and he was a therapist. And, you know, they're just put here to love people. And if that's one of my passions in my life, you know, like Peter, I adore you. And one of the things he always does in my life is, you know, when I first started doing this kind of thing, it freaked me out to have him in the front row. I mean, who doesn't, right? And to be partnering with him, because he's like Mr. Guru, you know? But what's so beautiful is he always says, Marion, just do Marion. Just be Marion. And it's one of the freedoms I have in my life today to be okay with who I am. You know, we're all broken. We're all messed up. We've all got our stuff, you know. And God made us all different for a reason. So there's a message in you, in your broken places. Like our big book talks about, you know, no matter how far down the scale we have come, we will see where our our experiences can benefit others. There's places in your brokenness that I can't touch somebody else. There's places in my brokenness that I can touch somebody else. You know what I mean? So I don't know how I got on that, but... because of the Steve Nobles thing, that I know that God put me here to love people, and I think he's put us all here to love people. Instead, we look at the human defects of these people and sometimes use their shortcomings. What were their shortcomings? What were they? Crazy we were. As a basis of wholesale condemnation, we talked of intolerance. This line is so, so powerful. We talked of intolerance while we're intolerant ourselves. Like, I can't tolerate this guy who goes to church. Look at him. He's got a suit and he's happy. That sucks, you know? I mean, really? What is, like, wrong with us, you know? We miss the reality. Oh, I love this line so much. We miss the reality and the beauty of the forest because we were diverted by the ugliness of some of its trees. We never gave the spiritual side of life a fair hearing. We never gave it a fair hearing. Oh. So, where am I going to go? Right now, I'm going to go right here. This is why we got to find God, guys. At the bottom of page 15. Here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed. They flatly declared that since they've come to believe in a power greater than themselves, to take a certain attitude towards that power and to do certain simple things, there's been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of total failure of their human resources, they found that a new power, a new peace, and a new happiness and sense of direction flowed into them. This happened wholeheartedly after they met a few simple requirements. That's probably the steps, right? It's probably taking some action. In fact, I'm sure it is. Once confused and baffled by the seemingly futility of existence, they show the underlying reasons why they were making a heavy going of life. Leaving aside the drink question, they tell why living was so unsatisfactory. They show how the change came over them when many hundreds of people are able to say, that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact of their lives. They present a powerful reason why one should have faith. Sorry about my nose. This is where we're going to find God. Actually, we're fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God. I know this preacher who tells a story of driving in London, going down a tunnel, and this is in his childhood, and there's a car heading head on, and the instinct right automatically was God. In each and every man, woman, and child. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or other, it's there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstration of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality deep down within us. In the last analysis, it's only there that he may be found. It was so with us. With this attitude, you cannot fail. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. And that's a promise, guys. And I'm just going to close with this. Even so, as God restored us all to our right minds, to this man the revelation was sudden. Some of us grow into it more slowly. So it's not saying you have to do it my way or anybody's way. Some of us may grow into it more slowly, but he has come to all who have honestly sought him. When we drew near to him, he disclosed himself to us. I want to thank you for this invitation to be here to do these 12 steps. And God bless you all, and I hope you find that higher power that you get.
Hello. Okay, so let's thank Marion again. I'd like to introduce Freddie, secretary.
Hi, my name is Fred, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seven tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked a friend to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Haley, alcoholic.
Hi.
Recovered. We are not cured from of alcoholism. Recovered but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem, alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered. Thank you.
...1940-style Big Book sponsorship. From the fourth to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sobered at once and remained that way, 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, and come to believe and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone need of a sponsor tonight? Please raise your hand. Please join us Monday nights. We have a Big Book study meeting in the other room over here where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30 and the meeting itself starts at 7:15. We have large print Big Book and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 8:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. Thank you, and I'll see you next week.
All right, folks. We also have tonight's session and all past speaker podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. And I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study. And those whom wish to thank tonight's speaker, line up in this center aisle. Sorry. And let's just close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, see you Monday or next Thursday. Godspeed. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
you need restoration. Yeah. And I am ready for you to take me higher, yeah. The only thing that I can do is keep on praying. Accumulation. Yeah. These possessions that I have amount to nothing at all.
But when you Keep on smiling, baby.